Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Diva Strategies for Success, where I get to bring you dynamic guests and topics. Today, I'm very excited because I have a fabulous guest. I had her on the show before, and she was so great that by popular demand, we brought her back. My guest's name is Debbie Love. She is the founder of Head Up Self-Defense for Women. She is also a fourth-degree black belt and certified instructor in karate and an advocate for women's safety. After the rape and murder of her cousin in 1988, Love began a quest to learn self-defense. But nothing stuck. She knew there had to be a better way. So she enrolled in martial arts to learn from the ground up. That was almost 20 years ago. Now Love is on a mission to educate women that self-defense is not about being strong. It's about being smart. Before devoting her full time to empowering women, Debbie spent 40 years as a paralegal in Alabama, Georgia, New York, and California. In today's world, we have to learn to be smart. So be sure to tune in and learn some dynamic words of wisdom to keep you safe and share the show with other women you know. With the COVID-19 event that's going on, that's affecting all of us, Debbie has been conducting online workshops. She is also available to speak for groups. She can be reached at lovedebbi@gmail.com. Welcome, Debbie. I'm so happy to have you back again on my show. How are you?
I am doing great. Thank you so much for having me back.
Well, you're so fabulous. We have to get more information from you. One of the questions I have, you know, it's almost time for students to be heading to college campuses in the fall. What message do you have for the new freshman class?
Well, I'm going to start with a couple of statistics here. And this is really sad, but women 24 and under, they suffer from the highest rates of rape. It's estimated that 1 in 5 women, just during those 4 years that they're in school, will experience rape or attempted rape, just in that time period. The thing is less than 5% of those will even report it. So the actual figures are hard to come by because women just don't want to report it. It's an embarrassing and humiliating thing to have to do. Because of what your mess, what happens when you go and report, you're really met with a lot of questions, like you caused the event, like how much did you had to drink, what were you wearing, and it's absolutely crazy, but it's part of the fact that society tends, sexual assault is the only crime that society tends to blame the victim, and that's what women have to go through.
Wow. I've heard you speak about the date rape triangle. What would you explain what that is?
First, I want to mention the red zone, because the red zone is the first thing that these freshmen have to deal with. And it starts like the minute these girls set foot on campus. And so it's the time period between orientation and Thanksgiving. And there are more sexual assaults. And it always includes rape. But there are more sexual assaults during that time period, those first 6 weeks, than any other time throughout the year. So that is huge for girls to know. If they just know what to watch for, they should be okay. These girls need to remember they need to go out in groups if possible. The problem is normally when they get to school, they don't have friends yet. So they need to be careful. The Also, fresh-faced freshmen are very, very easy to spot on campus. And the thing is what will happen is they'll be approached by a guy who invites them to a fraternity party. And, of course, these girls are stoked. They're very excited about going. But fraternity parties, a lot of them will have what's called rape culture around that fraternity house. And what that is the sexual assault at fraternity parties, it's almost like a game. It's like gang rape is like a ritual for the brothers, for the fraternity brothers, and common among athletes as well. But rape culture not only encourages male sexual aggression, but it also supports violence against women, where women are blamed for their own assault, and sexual violence is seen as normal, and rape is prevalent and even condoned. So that right there is scary. And about the date rape triangle, this is fascinating. If you were to imagine a triangle, and at the top of the triangle, you have the criminal intent of someone. So that is the intent of someone to assault you or rape you. But if you take another corner of that triangle and you have alcohol and drug drinking to excess, shall we say. And then the other end of the triangle is isolation. Whether or not the guy is going to be able to get you isolated. So not only can you not call for help, but you can't escape. So if women only realize that they control two out of those three factors, the only thing they can't control is the criminal intent of someone to assault them. But they can control how much alcohol or drugs they have, whether or not they drink to excess, or whether or not they're going to allow themselves to be isolated with someone. So if you're on a date, if you're going out on a date, you don't have the date pick you up. You meet them somewhere. You never get in a car alone with somebody you don't know or that you just met. Someone you don't know very, very well, you never get in the car with them because you're automatically isolated. If you've had too much alcohol, it dulls your senses. There's a lot of effects. You know, you might not even be able to fight back if you've had too much to drink. So alcohol is your one of your two enemies, alcohol and isolation. So you never get in the car with someone you don't know, and you don't drink too much. That is almost always the key, is these young girls go to college. They don't have a lot of experience with alcohol. They are served, they go to a frat house or anywhere else, and they're normally served that sweet, sweet punch. Tastes like Hawaiian punch. And you tend to drink it fast. And it can have a horrible effect. But if women just realize that of the three factors, they control two of them. And they don't have to get themselves in situations that they commonly do. So that's a huge, huge thing. Another thing they need to do is think about planning ahead. Think about, well, if he did this, what would I do? Or if I was drunk, could I fight back? Could I get home if things go wrong? Who would I call in case of an emergency? Because normally the parents aren't there and you don't have a friend network yet. Or if I lost my phone, what would I do? People are so dependent on their phones that, I mean, I don't know anybody's phone numbers that live in California. So they're all just in my phone. So these are just some things that if they just think about those little things, they should be okay. But also, let's just say a scenario. Let's say you're taken to a party and you don't know anyone there and you don't even know your date very well. That's confusing enough, right? So if you throw alcohol into the mix, it could be really disastrous. It slows down your reaction time And, you know, when you're drunk and high and in a strange place, it's hard to process what's happening to you during an assault. You can feel trapped and not even know how to get home. So, again, your enemies are the attacker and the alcohol, and Lord knows you should never get in a car with someone.
Okay.
Plus, I'm gonna add one more thing to that, Robbie. If escape is what you need to do, if your main objective is to escape, you need to think about what you need to do to do that. For instance, if you're wearing high heels, take them off. You can't run in them. Secondly, if you're wearing, for instance, a tight skirt, you need to hike it up above your knees so that you can run. One more thing is if you find yourself in an isolated parking lot and you are trapped there, the best thing you can do to save yourself is to crawl up underneath a car. Then nobody can reach you there. They might be able to poke you with a stick, but they won't be able to get to you. So that really wasn't a nutshell, but that's what women need to know and think about.
A blog you posted recently, you referred to it as the worst kind of crime and the most difficult to write. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was very difficult to write because I was a victim of this. And it has to do with crimes against children, sexual crimes against children. The average age that could happen is 8 years old, whether a boy or a girl. It's 8 years old. And, of course, you know, at 8 years old, you don't know what's going on or what's happening to you. But the thing is that crimes against children, sex crimes against children, is way more prevalent than people could ever imagine. And really, for parents, there's no room to be naive here. The harsh truth, though, is that 1 in 3 girls and 1 in 6 boys will have sexual contact with an adult before the age of 16 years old, which is hard to even, you know, even imagine. And the worst part of all this is that it's probably going to be someone that they know and trust. So whether or not it's a babysitter, a scout leader, a priest, a teacher, a coach, or even a family member. In my case, it was a family member. So there's some harsh truths there, and people tend to want to turn away from that, but they really need to be aware. 1 in 3 girls, and 1 in 6 boys, those are pretty high numbers.
Oh. Are there warning signs that something may have happened?
Well, there are. There are certain things. For instance, let's say someone is paying way too much attention to your child and not even interested in any other child or even their own child. Or, for instance, if there's an adult that has secrets with your kid, just a secret between the two of them. That could be a sign. Let's say your kid is in a sport that they love, whether it's soccer or even karate, or they love the piano, but all of a sudden they don't want to do it anymore. They don't want to go. They don't want anything to do with it. That's a sign. I mean, you might want to let them, you know, get 1 or 2 classes off and not go and see if maybe it's just a thing they're going through. But if it continues, you have to respect whatever your kid there. There are others. For instance, somebody who always insists on giving your kid a ride home, or someone that you don't know perhaps that is always showing up at your kid's event, or you know, at some kind of a sports thing, there's some man or a boy standing around that that isn't associated with any other person on the team. What predators tend to do is they'll find a flyer in a grocery store or wherever, a Boys and Girls Club it could be, and they will go to those games and try to find a kid that looks vulnerable. And for instance, if you're kind of like the – if your kid decides they don't want to do a sport anymore, and this, the next one is kind of like that. If your kid just adores their uncle or their cousin or whatever it may be, has always just loved them, run to them, jumped on them, and all of a sudden they avoid them, that's a sign. Anyone that has way too much access and privacy with your child and just seems a bit too close. Or the final one, and this is what happened to me, was if your kid starts wetting the bed. That's a clear sign that something ain't right.
Wow, that's interesting. We all want our kids to be able to go out and play. Is there something, anything parents can do to help ensure their safety?
Well, there is, there's the, I just went blank for a second. It's the registry of sex offenders. All you have to do is look under that registry, and not only will you see a picture of the offender, you will get their address. You will find out what they were arrested for, how long they served in prison. But you want to I scoured my – I live in Encinitas, and I checked my area, and there were five. There were five sex offenders within, like, 2 miles of where I live. And I was amazed. But it was great because I was able to see a picture. It was scary to a certain degree, but then again, it was a little comforting because you would know them if you spotted them. I mean, you need to really check that. And you should also talk to your kids about these things. You need to talk to them about their own safety. So you talk to them as age appropriate, but like, for instance, for a little one, they might say, well, I got a yucky feeling. Whereas a teenager would put it in different terms, right? They got a bad vibe, let's say. So you talk to them in terms that they understand, and it's never too early to start talking to your kids about safety, and you can do it very casually. Let's say you're taking a walk with your kid, and you see someone, maybe they're at a 7-Eleven asking for money, and they look disheveled, they look homeless, whatever. And so you ask the kid, does that person make you feel uncomfortable? And then you explain it to the kid that this person is asking for money, and ask the kid, well, what would you do if somebody offered you money? Because sex offenders, child sex offenders tend to give kids gifts, things like that. And so you want to kind of get their feel or let them know that you never accept money or anything else or gifts from someone they don't know. That's kind of thing that happens if, you know, they're playing on a playground and mom's or dad's not watching and somebody is able to steal away with their kid because they've offered them something. But if you let the kid know beforehand that you never accept a gift or money from somebody else, then perhaps they would not be baited by this.
Do you teach children?
I do. I've taught kids as young as 6 and up. So, yes, and sometimes it is easier for somebody else to have these discussions with your children. I mean, if, for instance, in school, stranger danger is still what they teach. I know my son, who's 30, was taught stranger danger. That needs to be updated. But, yes, a lot of times it is easier to have someone else or, you know, especially someone that's not threatening, you know, a woman maybe that can have that discussion with them and not make them feel uncomfortable. And another thing that parents should know is they should always teach children the proper words for body parts. So, so in the event something happens, the kid can talk about it.
Well, you've said that it's easy for women to find themselves in a bad situation. What are some of those examples?
Well, that's an easy one because that is exactly what happened to my cousin, which is why I do this today. Number one, to me, is running out of gas because that is what happened to her. Another one today might be leaving the house without your cell phone or having your cell phone go dead, not having it juiced up, but like getting in a car with someone you don't know, following a crowd when you don't even know any of them and aren't comfortable with whatever it is they're doing. I would say another thing that can get women in a bad situation as far as I'm concerned, one of my major complaints is women who walk around with earbuds, because not only does that let some, you know, it shows that you're not paying attention, that you're not listening to anything, you can't hear anything around you, but it also shows whoever might be watching you that you're vulnerable. So that's a big pet peeve for me. But there are a lot of ways that women can get themselves in situations, kind of like the car, not having it well maintained or things like that can get a woman into trouble.
Oh, that's interesting. We've all been spending more time at home during the pandemic. What effect has this had on women?
The first women I think about when it comes to this are domestic violence. They call them survivors. I think while it's going on, I consider them victims. But in domestic violence situations, normally the women will have breaks now and then. Either they go to work, they go to the grocery store, they pick up the kids from school, whatever that might be. But during this pandemic, everybody's been closed up. And if you can imagine being closed up with your abuser, not having an escape. Normally, also, when it comes to domestic violence, the abuser has complete control of their victim. So they, you know, either don't give them a phone or they monitor the phone, or they want to know everyone that they see, talk to. They completely control their lives, whether through finances. It could be in different ways, but you don't have the normal outlets that you would. So normally the outlets for domestic violence victims are either family members or friends. Well, during the pandemic, you know, people are like nobody in, nobody out. So they don't even have their usual fail-safe people. And it can be very, very difficult. It's very difficult for them to make a call or get a call, and they are truly trapped. So, and then you go with the extra stress that comes with the financial situation and, of course, all being stuck at home. So, you know, the abuser has 24/7 access to their victim. And one in four women have experienced severe severe beatings, you know, physical violence from their partner. And when you have a situation like that and you have no escape, it just has to be a nightmare. It just has to be a nightmare. So for anybody who maybe even thinks a friend of theirs or somebody they know might have been victimized, or their spouse or partner might have control of them, it's a good idea during this time, during this pandemic, to reach out, just to say hello, but just to let them know that you're there, because they might be, you know, almost kept prisoner pretty much in their house. The according to the different domestic violence agencies, at least initially when this all happened, they closed up the doors of these shelters. Now I think they've opened them up a little bit, and certainly the hotlines are available. But the victims also got to have access to a phone to be able to make that phone call that they need help. So it's really a trying time for anybody who's a victim of domestic violence. They're the ones I'm worried about right now.
We have exactly 3 minutes and 44 seconds. So what I want you to do is first tell us about you're doing self-defense classes online and how people can contact you, a little bit about that. And why or how, what makes your classes different? And are there any self-defense weapons you can recommend for women? And I think when we finish those, we'll be up with time.
Okay. Well, I'm Heads Up Self Defense. My website's headsupselfdefense.com. An easier email for me might be Debbie@headsupselfdefense.com. And then my phone number is 760-455-8562. And I've got no problem with people calling me and asking me questions. As far as how I'm
different. Debbie, say that phone number again. You went pretty fast. And say the website again.
Oh. Okay. The phone number is 760-455-8562. And the it's headsupselfdefense.com. And I can be reached at Debbie@headsupselfdefense.com.
All right, tell us about your classes and tell us about why is your classes different and what kind of weapons, and see where we are on the time on that. I think we'll just finish through. We have 2 minutes and 24 seconds.
Okay. Well, my classes are different because, well, first off, I'm tiny. I'm very small. I'm under 5 feet tall and under 100 pounds. So any technique I can do, anybody else can do. And when I first started trying to learn self-defense, it was men that were teaching me, and I wasn't learning. They were saying, hey, if he does this, you do that. Well, that didn't work for me. There was no way I would remember if he did grab me here what to do. What I teach comes naturally to women. It is easy to do and easy to remember. There's no way somebody is going to forget what I tell them to do because it is so simple. So that is how I am different. Now, as far as the weapons, I suggest to women a stun gun. I don't suggest pepper spray because if the wind's blowing in the wrong direction, you're going to get sprayed. So instead of spraying them, you're going to get sprayed. Stun guns, I sell one that's it looks like a large lipstick, and it's 2.5 million volts. And it just the noise, the sound alone that this thing makes would scare anything off, even a dog, coyote. So I think it's a perfect thing for women because if they do get in a car with somebody that threatening, they thought they knew, but they didn't, and is threatening, if they pull this out of their purse, somebody else is going to think they're just looking to freshen up. And so it's a perfect weapon for a woman because it will take someone down very quickly.
Well, Debbie, it's been wonderful having you on the show. The half an hour goes really fast. We're down to
really
24
fast.
Seconds. So thank you again, and we'll have to have you back again. I think it's interesting because especially in this time, women really need to think about safety. So again, thank you. It was great. And I enjoyed having you on the show today.
I always enjoy talking to you, Robbie. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.